Nicole and I went to Minds and Money, New York, a little while ago, and there was a really nice guy we met who was with two bankers, and his name is Jeff Hampson. And Jeff, previously, before getting into mining and gold and stuff, some of the same partners are now in para with him, but they had a major exit in the technology space for, correct me if I'm wrong, like $500 million.
$565 million.
Around that. Whatever. So Jeff and his partners have done fantastically well, and now they're pursuing gold. And their model, which is really interesting and intrigues me, and in fact intrigued Eric Sprott enough to pull the trigger and invest in this company, was that Jeff is basically buying smaller mines that need minimal capex to get going that have huge exploration upside. So this is a play on small-scale production, non-dilutive exploration moving forward, if that makes sense. Cash is coming out of the ground and going back into the ground. So without further ado, Jeff.
Well, Sean is correct. I've been involved in a bunch of different businesses, and probably the best was the technology business and infrastructure business that we started in 2000, at the end of 2001, just as the bubble was about to burst. And myself and two other guys invested $6 million of our capital and then exited in 2015 for $565 million. So that was a pretty good win. But what that taught me was that when everybody else is running for the doors, there usually means there's an opportunity to get in. And so in 2015, we were looking at opportunities, and one of the things that we happened to be in at the time was in a major shareholder position of this public company called Para Resources. Para had a property in Brazil and it was an exploration play, and we had been funding that because the market really didn't care about exploration. We said, okay, well, there must be a play here for us. What can we do? And so the idea was a very simple one, as Sean mentioned, is that let's find really highly prospective properties where there's an existing historic mine, where there's either maybe the presence of artisanal miners or a bunch of old mines, something that would indicate that this is a good area where we can get an entry into the space by producing gold, producing cash flow, and then using that to build a resource. And that's really, in a nutshell, our strategy. Get through that. So this is what I was talking about. We're really looking for a relatively low-cost entry point to build something of real value. And so we've acquired two mines. One was the El Limon mine in Colombia, and I'll talk some more about these mines as we go through. El Limon has been in production for 25 years. We acquired it for $5 million, but it was $1 million down, another $1 million that's due at the end of 2018, and a royalty of 2% that's capped at $3 million. So that makes up the purchase price. We've invested another $7.5 million into rehabilitation and increasing the throughput of that mine, and we're just about to start. We're producing today, but we're going to full production next month. The $10 million that's up there on the slide includes the purchase of 22,000 hectares surrounding the mine, and that's really where the prospective territory is for exploration. Just recently, we acquired 88% of the Gold Road mine in Arizona. This mine had been operating a year ago, but was on care and maintenance because the owner at the time, was 87, didn't want to leave an operating mine in his estate and was looking for an exit. He didn't hire bankers or have any kind of a process to try and sell it. He waited for somebody to come and knock on the door. I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. He originally wanted $25 million. We bought it for $7 million, $1 million down, and $1 million a year with no interest for 6 years. So this mine, the Gold Road mine, is production ready. We're currently doing a PEA. There's a lot of historical data, drilling data, and production data, and we've hired RPM Global to do a PEA. They're working on that now. We should have a resource calculation from them, a new one, shortly. This is a great opportunity. And I'm not a miner. As you can tell, I invest in businesses. I've got a bunch of different businesses now that I own or that I have partners in. Everything from contract mining in Kamloops to senior housing development in Florida, and a manufacturing business in West Virginia. But in each of those other businesses, I have full-time CEOs. So I have taken on the role of CEO of this company to kind of get it to the next stage, but I've partnered up with two guys that have a lot of experience in the mining industry. And that's really part of my strategy, is to make sure that when I identify an opportunity, I find the right management team, and then I put the deal together with financing and so forth. So these guys are the key to this business because they've been there and done it before. Randy Martin has built three mining companies, which he's sold, one to B2 Gold, one to Yamana, and another one to Columbia Goldfields. So he knows his way around Latin and South America. He understands narrow vein mining. He also knows how to work with small artisanal miners, and that's part of what we're doing in Colombia. So he's a key element in making sure that we do the right things in the operations. Ian was the country manager for Corriente when it was sold to the Chinese, so he speaks Spanish, also a mining engineer, knows his way around Latin and South America, was formerly the CEO of Amec Mine, which was a polymetallic mine in Saudi Arabia. He lived in Saudi Arabia for 4 years, and then decided that he couldn't live there any longer. And kind of a funny story is, his joke, not mine, is that he had to leave Saudi Arabia because he was missing the three B's. And the three B's are booze, bacon, and brats. So, pardon me. But so he came back, and luckily I knew him from a previous gig, and so he joined us, and he's been a great addition. We've also got very strong technical skills. Paolo has been an exploration geologist, has made a couple of discoveries, has worked for Codelco and Barrick and Vale, very knowledgeable guy. He lives in Brazil, but he travels around to our various properties. Jim Taylor has been my CFO for 27 years now, CPA, both in Canada and in the United States. And then a recent addition is Roberto. And Roberto is important because he's our metallurgist and process engineer. And when we first got ready to start up El Limon again, we had lots of problems with some of the new equipment and some of the old equipment. We were, our engineers at the time, who were contract engineers, couldn't quite figure it out. We brought Roberto in, and within a couple of weeks, he had figured it out. And so we've had to make some changes to the process, but we're just about to get started again. But he's been very key to our success. So having the right team is really the critical issue here. So just to reiterate, find these locations that we call highly prospective for a large discovery. Find a way to enter into that and generate some cash flow. Either we buy a historic one or we that need to be upgraded or one that's been poorly managed and have a cheap entry point. I always think you make your money when you buy rather than when you sell. And so it's been difficult to find these opportunities that meet the criteria because they're not easy to find them that meet all of them. But we've looked at about 200 different transactions and done two, so we're you know, getting back into production on both locations. El Limon, next month we'll start up full production, and Gold Road, we're completing the PEA, but we expect to be in production in Q1 of 2018. We're doing the resource calculation and PEA and Gold Road, and we're not doing the same thing in El Limon, and I'll explain that a bit later. So El Limon, as I mentioned, is operating. We recommissioned the mine. So we recommissioned the mine back in May, end of May, early June, and we started out by running 40 tons per day. We had upgraded the mine. When we bought it, it was doing 75 tons. It was built for 75 tons per day. It's permitted for 400 tons per day, and just when I'm thinking about permitting, that's also a key element of our acquisition strategy, is that these acquisitions we make have to be fully permitted. We do not want to go through the permitting process. So it's permitted for 400 tons per day. It's a cyanide leach operation with Merrill-Crowe. We upgraded the throughput to 225 tons a day by adding a second ball mill. We completely rebuilt the flotation circuit, new jigs, new thickeners, new cyanide leach tanks, upgraded the Merrill Crowe. But our engineers screwed up on, and our team as well, is that the filter press wasn't capable of going up to full production. So we found that that was a bottleneck. So we've been operating at about 20% of capacity for the last 3 or 4 months. We've been producing about 400 ounces per month. And so what we know is if we can bypass, like we'll get around the filter press issue, that we can bring the production up to sort of 15 to 1800 ounces per month. The grade is a little bit lower than we gain as the ore is getting richer. It's averaging 8 grams per ton. We're starting to see on some of our advanced drilling 10 to 11. And we're using some of the artisanal miners who are on our property to supply us. So we're going to be ramping up as soon as the filter press is on site and is being installed as we speak. So we're thinking probably sometime early next month to start operations again and start producing positive cash flow. We break even at 400 to 450 ounces per month. So this can be a very, very profitable business. I'll mention the feed from the small miners because the underground mine here is only capable of producing 75 tons per day. And we can upgrade that by increasing the size of the shaft, but we decided not to because on the property which we've acquired, there's 22,000 hectares, there are about 400 small artisanal miners. Now, when we arrived, they were illegal. But we have gone through the process of legalizing them. We haven't got all of them, but the government of Colombia wants these guys to enter the formal economy. And because they're on our property, we own the mineral rights, technically that gold belongs to us. And we've seen other companies try and chase these small miners off without much success. You chase them off, they come around behind you and come back in. So in order to maintain sort of social peace in the area, we've decided to let them stay, but that they have to sell their ore to us. This is better for them because they actually make more money. We buy it, we buy the ore at 50% of the assayed value in the ore, assuming an 85% recovery. And they've been using mercury amalgamation where they only get 31, 32%, and they have to crush by hand, whereas they can deliver the lump to us. So it's a much better deal for them. And we've been signing them up on a regular basis. So we'll be buying 150 to 175 tons per day from them and to supplement the 75 tons a day that we're taking out of our underground. And the plan is that once we have cash flow, is to go about and to start drilling. And we'll leave them to mine the surface. Most of these guys are trenching at surface in the same vein system that we're mining underground. So when we buy from the small miners, here's some of the economics. If you assume a $1,200 an ounce gold price and an average grade of 8 grams per ton, which is our assumption, we pay the miner $151 a ton. Our processing costs are $60 a ton. That means that our total cost to produce an ounce is $743 an ounce. So this is only about $50 an ounce more than what it cost us when we mine our own material. So the difference is sort of negligible. But it ensures that we're getting the gold that is on our property. So it works out really well. The social benefits are also interesting. The government gets paid their royalty, which they like. They eliminate the use of mercury, which is a mandate of the government. The small miner is legalized. So that means he can get he can send his kids to school. He doesn't have any fear of being arrested. He's not no fear of being held up by the paramilitaries. And we essentially are hedging our mining cost and ensuring a long-term supply. And because of this strategy, we decided not to do a 43-101 resource calculation because we don't really have life of mine issues. These guys have been mining, the small miners have been mining 400 to 500 tons per day of ore at 10 to 12 grams per ton for 150 years. And there's no shortage of it. So that leads us to believe that there is a much bigger resource there because, I mean, you can see on the far right-hand side, you know, the only known property that we acquired is 1 kilometer north to south. The O2 property is 12 kilometers north to south. There are a series of parallel veins which are chemically and grade-wise, exactly the same as what we're mining at El Limon. We know that the El Limon mine is open to 1,000 meters, which has been drilled. We're currently mining at 450 meters, and we've already taken 500,000 ounces out of there. I mean, the mine is. So we know that this vein system goes up and down this valley. So we think that there's potential there for millions of ounces of resource once we go in and drill it out. And we're quite happy to allow the small miners to continue to mine the surface. We'll go down underneath. So this is where the exploration potential is that, you know, our geologists, we sort of look at this and say, we could quite easily see 2 or 3 million ounces here. There also was some historic drilling that was offset from the vein. The vein dips to the west, and the previous owners drilled three holes to the east. So not in the vein. They had already been underground, knew that the vein system wasn't there, but found some interesting mineralization. So they went in and they drilled it. These are not 43-101 compliant, and there was no QAQC, and we don't have the core. All we have is the report. But some very interesting results. From surface, on 68, 117, and 53 meters in depth, all ended in mineralization, an average between 2.73 grams per ton and 7.4 grams per ton. So there's something interesting happening here. We don't know exactly what it is, but it is a very interesting exploration target. So we're actually mobilizing next month to redrill those three holes, or to twin them. So the Gold Road mine, as I mentioned, is a historic mine. It was built in 1998, but the actual mine itself has been mined since the early 30s. The whole Oatman district is a prolific mining district. It's a famous area. It's actually become a bit of a tourist attraction now because there is an old mining town. Some of you may have been there. They're famous because they have wild burros that kind of travel around. People come and buy feed and they feed the burros. The place stinks. but it seems to be, it's on historic Route 66. It's kind of a cool spot. But this is a very interesting property because it's got historic data. It's open at depth. It's open on strike, and there are a number of other mines kind of along the trend on both this vein, which is called the Gold Road vein, and the next vein, which is called the True vein. But when we bought it, there were 90,000 ounces of gold that had been proven out, blocked out. Drilled out, production drilling. All the production costs have been absorbed. This is ready to go. This is ore that is ready to be extracted. And the previous owner decided to leave these 90,000 ounces there because he thought that would increase the value of the mine. He could easily have mined it, but he didn't. So we could get back into production like almost immediately. But what we've decided to do is to bring in our consultants. And have them look at our mine plan and actually do a PEA. And because there's so much data from the previous owner, all kinds of drilling, all kinds of production data, they're going to be able to do that in January. And what we expect is that it's going to come out with a NPV somewhere between $25 and $45 million. Remember, we paid $7 million for this. During our due diligence, we had the equipment. Appraised. We had SRK come in and they appraised the equipment on an orderly liquidation basis at $23 million. So we're not interested in being in the used equipment business, but we could be in a very profitable used equipment business. So it's well located right at the corner of Nevada, California, and Arizona. Lots of infrastructure, very close to Kingman, which is a mining town, so there's no shortage of qualified people to work there. In a very prolific mining area. You can see all those little mining symbols. There's literally hundreds and hundreds of small mines working this area. Multiple veins at surface. Some of these have never been drilled. People have just gone in and mined the veins. So there's lots of upside potential there. There was a technical report done in 2009. Showed that they had a resource of 412,000 ounces. Since that time, 50,000 ounces have been produced. But at that time, they said at a $1,200, you can see that this is old data. So what we did is we did a price sensitivity, and based on that model, at $1,200 gold, and those numbers at the time, it had an NPV of $44 million. So we think that it'll come in slightly lower because mining costs have gone up, but it's going to be a very interesting bump in value. So we own the land. The mill is in great shape. We've already had an assessment done on that and a startup estimate done by our engineers. Their report says that in order to start it up at full production, we need to spend $82,000. And that's mostly on things like changing oils, changing a few bearings, a few hoses here and there. But it's been very well maintained. It ran at full capacity only a year ago. It's in a very, very, very good shape. They were getting great recoveries as well. I mean, some of the recoveries were up at 95% of the gold. On average, it was 92%. The Doré is 95% gold and silver, so it's pretty pure. I'm rushing a little bit because I've got the signal. I mentioned other areas, other mines in the area. We've now accumulated some of those claims. Some we've purchased, some we've leased with purchase options. This, the area that we've accumulated today, based on the historical records, more than 2.3 million ounces have been produced. And the average grade of all the mines together is 24.57 grams per ton. Now, these mines stopped operating in 1942 because of the war effort. The government mandated that all non-essential activities had to stop. They've flooded, but they stopped producing in ore, and they were producing very, very high grades. In one of the mines that we now own the claims on, they were mining, when they stopped mining, they were mining a 13-foot wide vein at 1.1 ounces per ton. And this is a near, so almost perfect mining conditions. Very, very stable rock. There's a lot of upside here in this area. And this is just a little map of the area. You can see there's three sort of parallel veins. On the top is the Gold Road vein, where the Gold Road mine and mill is. It's about 800 meters between those veins, so it's very, very close. But you can't read that, and I probably can't either. But these mines, from the historical records, you know, were mining 400 to 700 thousand ounces at grades between half of an ounce per ton to 1.2 ounces per ton. So what's interesting here is you can see there's a series of mines in a row. Half of these mines have never been drilled, and there's never been drilled in between. So there's an enormous number of exploration targets here. And we see that there's, and they mined to 600 feet on average, and it was open at depth. So we think that We've acquired, so all of these properties, we haven't gotten all of the ones we want, but we've gotten the 90% of them. And acquired is maybe the wrong, it's a lease, an annual lease. On one of them, for instance, it's $5,000 a year with an option to buy it for $450,000 at the end of 4 years. Well, if we find another 200,000 ounces at 1 ounce per ton, it'll be worth spending $400,000. So we've got some short-term objectives. We're going to have both of these guys producing gold in Q1 of 2018. We think that we'll produce 50,000 ounces between the two of them. It could be more. It just depends on how quickly we ramp up. But we are producing gold today, as I mentioned. Next month, we'll be at full production in El Limon. And as soon as we complete the PEA, we can get into production in Gold Road. And I think that once we get those drill results from the twinning of those three holes, we're not going to do three, we're going to do the three, and then we're going to step back 50 meters. If we get those kinds of results that they had in 1998, then that is going to be a whole new resource. There we go. 138 million shares outstanding. About 90 million of that is owned by management. My company owns 20 million shares, 14.6%. My partner Glenn who Glenn and I are partners in a mine services company, contract mining business. He's the biggest shareholder at 43 million shares. Randy's got 15 million, 16 million. Out of that public float, Palisade owns about 3.5%, maybe it's 4%. Eric Sprott owns 7.5% personally. And there's a couple other institutional guys that own, you know, several million shares. So the true float is really only about 20 million shares. El Limon is fully funded, and we've got the cash on hand to finance the PEA. Once we decide what we're going to do at Gold Road, we're going to have to figure out how we're going to finance that. There is one of the things that we're looking at is a $3.5 million investment into a shaft, which eliminates the use of wheeled trucks on the 2 mile long decline. That cuts our cost per ounce by about $100 an ounce. So at 50,000 ounces a year on a $3.5 million capex, the payback is about 9 months. So once we get the PEA, we're going to make a decision on how we're going to operate the mine and what we'll need in the way of financing. But it is inevitable that at some time in the spring, we're going to need to raise a bit more money. So that's it. We've got a really strong technical team. We've got committed shareholders. We're not a typical junior mining company in that management and the insiders, you know, own a big chunk of this company. We've put real money in, $14 million US of our capital into the deal. So this is not a paycheck company. We watch our pennies. We have very low overhead. And we're there at this point because we've got such a big investment, we're there to backstop it. So, I mean, we'd like to get money from the public, but at this point, if we couldn't raise the money that we needed, we'd likely do it ourselves. So we've got, you know, diversified country risk. And I think that, you know, our goal is to be producing 100,000 ounces by 2020. I think we're well on our way. That's it. Any questions?
Besides the twinning of the historic holes in Colombia, are there any plans to do further exploration there?
Yes. We have in our budget for next year $1.4 million worth of drilling at El Limon, but we're waiting until we get into production and we're cash flow positive before we do that. So the program has been designed, the target's identified, but we're waiting to pull the trigger until we can pay for it out of cash flow.
Did you say you were raising some more money?
Well, I think we'll likely be raising more money in the spring. So at the moment, we don't need it. What we'll raise will be around the PEA at Gold Road. And because Colombia is fully financed, it'll only be what we decide to do in Gold Road. And as I mentioned, we could really get back into production almost right away. So we might need just a small amount of money for working capital. But we could also decide that we want to spend the $3.5 million on CapEx in order to increase the profit per ounce.
When did Eric get involved and at what price?
Eric got involved in the private placement that we closed in July or August. I think it was August. And he paid 20 cents a unit, which was a share and a half of a share purchase warrant at 30 cents. The stock is trading below that price today, mostly I think because the market's just waiting for us to show that we're actually doing what we say we're going to do in Colombia. Okay, thanks very much.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people? Hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip-your-face-off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on?